Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I have four words for you and four words only. Oh, wah, ah, ah, ah. I hope you're doing well.
I'm going to retort with, oh, wah, nah, nah, nah. I am not listening to Disturbed. It is, let me just check my watch here, 2022. The obsolete is calling for their salete back.
Oh, do you know, I mean, if we were in the office together, you would have heard this song by now. But to the uninitiated, Disturbed have a new song. And it sounds exactly like the songs that they've always done.
Sticking to their guns, man. I mean, you can never fault them for that. But at the same time, maybe it's time to retire those firearms, you know?
I think it's a fine song, and that's about it. It's called Hey You, where he just sort of goes, Hey Yo, over and over again. And
I mean, that doesn't sound great. You're not selling it to me, mate.
It's not great. It's not the infection, I'll say.
Is it better than the New Architects song?
Yes, but so is many. Like, my wife just got diagnosed with COVID. I think she's having a better time than listening to the New Architect song.
I was so disappointed because it's like from where they came from, the likes of Hollow Crown, when they were stonkingly heavy. Then they did that whole sort of concept album style thing. And I was like, okay, cool. I can dig this kind of like thricey elements here. Mm-hmm. And then it came to this situation where it's just like, hey, you know what's popular? Imagine Dragons. It's like, nah, not for me. Pass.
I can't fault them. I can't fault the reach. I can't fault them going, okay, we should have a song that maybe might break into the Billboard top 50 or whatever. We should reach in that direction because we've only been getting more melodic over the years. But I think it's not a great song. I think the riff is a bit naff.
The thing is that like it reminds me of like I can't remember where I read this quote, but it was somebody describing how if you ever read a band giving an interview about the heavier parts are heavy and the melodic parts are more melodic, that screams of a studio cramping down on their style to make them more pop friendly so that they can get their songs out on more avenues. And this to me feels like somebody behind the scenes has twisted their arm and being like, hey lads, do you want to actually like make some money now? Do you want to go on the like the Bullet for My Valentine method of I'm not using the term selling out, but just completely changing where you started to just go, let's just do stadium rock. Let's just get as many bums in seats as possible.
That's kind of like the new Beartooth stuff. Like, I mean, I really like Below.
It's just inoffensive, isn't it? It's just like, okay, like, if I ever wanted elevator music in hell, then that's it. Because it's basically like metal, blah, 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 by the numbers, metal.
There should absolutely be an album called Elevator Music in Hell. That would be brilliant. Just bring it together.
But anyway, welcome to the UBP, apparently the music podcast.
we've got to get it out somewhere. It's got to be done somewhere. But yeah, this is the Entitled Banter podcast where we always get through as many questions and thoughts and whatever you send in as possible.
I'm Scott Tilford,
joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, I forget what you said there. I sort of talked over you, but that's.
Oh, I was just saying maximum four questions that we ever answer.
Hey, I've got a lovely little selection here, so we'll get through as many as we can. I do want to do a very quick PSA though, because a lot of people will be checking out the Resident Evil show this weekend. I watched all of that last night. It's abysmal. So just know that it's just terrible, and just sort of go in not wanting a Resident Evil show, and just a cool little show. Kinda, it's pretty bad anyway, but it is tied to the Resident Evil name, and maybe that'll get you through it. Just know that it has nothing to do with Resident Evil.
Oh, so we're basically looking at what the TV equivalent of Resident Evil Umbrella Corps was. A game that had the Resident Evil name and IP, but had no connection to any sort of gameplay or ethos of it at all.
It's kind of like the Halo show. It's just sort of like, here's a story that we were going to do.
Halo show, like the Cuphead show. Just kind of like, it's everyone's favorite. It's Master Chief. What silly, wacky adventures he's getting up to. Oh, shoot somebody in the face with a needler.
Well, the thing is, like, the Halo show felt like, okay, you had a different story, and then you just sort of called the guy Master Chief, and you called all these different elements, all this different nomenclature and recognizable stuff, and that's what Resi feels like. And there is a huge twist in episode 7 of Resident Evil where they try and tie it into the entire everything else that's gone before, but which would be a fun thing.
Because the audience at home can't see the video to this, I'm gonna just say some stuff and I'm gonna guess what the twist is. I haven't seen it, I haven't read it, I have nothing about it.
Can we just do a thumbs up or a
Yeah, you do
down?
A thumbs up, and what I'll do is I'll reel off a few of them so that they can't tell which is the one if I actually do hit the nail on the head.
Okay, I'll be amazed if you get this.
Do you
want me to give you the setup? Do you know what the setup of the show is?
It's actually a prequel, right? And it's the Oswald Spencer is Wesker, and Wesker is that? Am I close? Because I know that he's technically a clone. No, okay. So what about the Cerberus dog? Is actually a puppy throughout the entire show, and it turns into there's the tyrant in this time around isn't actually William Birkin. It's actually somebody looking through the portals from Bioshock Infinite. The hunk is actually the main character of the show. His voice box ripped out.
I wish there was anything in there that was that more directly relatable to Resident Evil.
Dang it!
It's a thing. It's definitely a thing. I don't know. I'm kind of with the people going like, what the hell is this? It feels like it started as a different show entirely, and some studio, probably Netflix, went, we can do that if you call that character Albert Wesker, and if you call that family the Weskers,
it feels disinterested with its own franchise.
Pretty much, it's kind of like its own. It's just weird. It's like a double timeline thing where you've got like the zombie apocalypse in 2036. Yeah. And then everything that's happening in 2022 in Raccoon City, it's called New Raccoon City. All this stuff's in the trailer. But then it's just sort of like, what could have possibly happened to trigger the zombie apocalypse? And I'm like, well, that's probably the franchise, to be honest. You probably sort of did the thing with the virus. Like, that's not really a mystery, is it? Like, you've sort of, if you show a zombie apocalypse and then a lab, like, years beforehand, you can easily connect the dots.
Yeah, that
and then
seems it takes a very them, like, weird approach to do that.
Hours and hours and hours of, oh, what really happened? And we know what really happened. There's a little few more wrinkles to it, and there is a massive twist, like I said, in episode 7, but it's a hell of a thing. But anyway, I just wanted to let people know that show, for as much as, like, some of the reviews are like 9 out of 10.
Really?
GameSpot gave it 9 out of 10. I forget who gave it 2 out of 10, but they were all over the place. I'm very much in the negative, it's a mess camp. I think even if you, like, disconnect all the Resident Evil stuff, it's still terribly made and terribly acted. So there's all that to it. But yeah, PSA delivered. So
well, I will not be
yourselves.
Watching it. I will not be watching it.
I would love your reaction to it, because it's a hell of a thing. But anyway, we'll get through as many questions and stuff as we can. First one from John Wood, who says, what's your take on the announced PlayStation Stars service? It's a bit vague at the minute, but it sounds an awful lot like they're copying Xbox's Microsoft Rewards service, but with added statue and figure rewards. Now, have you seen this stuff so far?
I have not seen this. Please fill me in.
Stars. So the Stars service is like John Wood said, their attempt to sort of give you some sort of reward for playing games, which is what Nintendo has and Xbox has. On the Xbox side, they tend to give you like high street vouchers and various sort of tie-in deals to, you know, go to restaurants and whatever. Sometimes they're game related, but it's very, I don't think they've ever let you just buy a new game based on the Xbox, you know, gamer score that you got by getting achievements. On the Nintendo side, it's just lame. It's just sort of like, here's a phone wallpaper or like a sticker that you can put on, like, you know, whatever. It's never like anything meaningful. PlayStation got out there, it would have been yesterday, and announced their PlayStation Stars service, which they've said will let you have access to certain deals on the PlayStation Store based on whatever trophies you get. They also said one of the things that they're exploring is the idea of if you're the first person to get a platinum in your local time zone, which feels like that'll be like an insane gold rush at like midnight, people trying to get the first platinum. And then in regards to statues and figure rewards, they're digitized versions of them, so I don't know how that's going to play in, but they've said that they can give you, it's essentially like merchandise, but it's all digitized. But either way, the idea of giving you rewards for playing stuff,
isn't that going back to the first person to platinum a game in your local area, is that not going to cause conflict with people who have early access copies of the game? Like, I know that reviewers and stuff are given codes that are obviously sometimes kept off the grid, but as soon as you're then allowed to jump back on, you get full access the same as everyone else.
Because that was one of the first things that, because I tweeted saying, like, you know, that this whole thing about like a midnight platinum is going to be brutal, and someone said that. I was like, what is up with reviewers getting access to it? They've not said, but I have to assume that the actual like timer on this stuff isn't going to go live until the public launch.
Right. Yeah,
but then you would pre-load all the other trophies.
Yeah, unless they do a thing now where they're going to sort of keep trophies offline and then they suddenly come online, but even then you'd still earn them in that. And actually that would annoy me more if I got halfway through a game and then I had to go back and replay the game in order to unlock the trophies again.
That's happened to me before. But that happened when I reviewed Horizon Zero Dawn.
But here's a question though, like, you've already got the PlayStation Plus discounts that for games. Does this mean that you're going to get a double discount, or you're going to get a sort of mid-tier discount that is less than the PlayStation Plus things?
I don't know.
Is this going to be a paid service as well that's tied into
So they've said the having a Stars membership is free, and then, I mean, that's the thing. It, like he says in his question, it is quite vague at the minute. There's a blog post about it, and that's it.
And they love their blog post to just detail. Like, seriously, it's the biggest announcement in the world. Let's just do a little font text there. But yeah, let's go.
We've got a 15-second CG trailer, but we've got the blog post, lads.
I'll put it on MySpace. People will see it.
Put it on Bebo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always one
Habbo
of those
Hotel.
Where...
Let's go.
But it's like one of those things where it's like, especially with the likes of God of War, like, people were screaming to know more about that, and then it was revealed that they had a blog post ready to go and a tiny little CG teaser, and we eventually managed to get it. But yeah, everything seems to be coming through their blog at the minute, and their latest thing is this PlayStation Stars service, which I like the idea of. You know, if you play a whole ton of games like I do, or you know, cane a specific game and you get a platinum or whatever, that they can reward you for that. I think that's kind of cool. I think the idea of it has always been way greater than the reality of it. Like I said, the Nintendo side of it and the Xbox side of it have always just been so paltry and so whatever. It's just sort of, you know, like on the Xbox side, it's like, well, we can give you a month of Game Pass. And it's like, well, that's something I already have or whatever. Whereas the potential of, you know, you play a bunch of games and they actually give you a voucher for the actual store and you can buy, you know, it's like a coffee thing. Like you buy 9 and get the 10th free or something. Then I like that idea.
Yeah, that could work. But I like you say, I feel like trying to tie it to real life stuff obviously means that because it's like different for every location. I mean, like what has value in one area might not have value in another. And so it's like a case of, do I care if I live out in the middle of the sticks and I've got no sort of like shopping outlets or restaurants or places to eat about getting like a Ben and Jerry's tub free with my Domino's order or whatever? Like, no, I don't care about that. Like, it's
Do you also, were you into PlayStation Home back in the 2000s?
Was I into it? I mean, No, I'm thinking of Second Life. What's PlayStation?
It was very similar to Second Life.
It was the
PS3
right
thing where it was like you can like make a digital avatar and go play digital pool with your friends and get like a digital apartment and all that kind of stuff.
I remember, just live in a space. I remember looking at it and just being like, that looks like a complete waste of my time.
But it was cool. I liked it, but I mean, I like at the time I had a bunch of friends who were also on it, so we'd meet up after school or whatever and just play play a bunch of games and stuff. And I liked the idea of it. But yeah, one of the things that they've mentioned in the blog post is getting digital statues and digital figurines as a reward for gameplay, but I don't know where the hell they go.
So isn't that just achievements and trophies? Aren't you just basically giving them a coat of paint?
Maybe they're going to refresh the PS5 UI, because I guess they're kind of overdue like a dashboard upgrade anyway, because it's been like 2 years. And maybe there's a place on the dashboard where you can put your like fake trophies or something. I remember back in 2006 or something, when PlayStation Home was first being teased, and one of the big things they said about it was you would have your little fake apartment, your little digital apartment, and you would be unlocking items of like statues and trophies and couches based on a game. And one of the examples given was a Devil May Cry couch. And I remember thinking that'd be the best thing in the world. So I was like, I'll
play
Devil May Cry.
Just a red leather jacket draped over another red leather couch.
With a little white arm on it. Just a little white albino side of it.
A little pizza crust crumbs everywhere.
But like, I like the idea of a customizable space or a customizable dashboard maybe based on what you're playing. Because at the minute, the PS5 doesn't have any themes, anything to put behind it, whereas Xbox has animated stuff or whatever. But yeah, I think the potential for it is awesome. I love the idea of a rewards program based on playability. But so far, no one's got it right, so maybe they can. Next question from Rich Roberts, who says, hey gents, loving your work and have been through the back catalogue of UBPs. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
If you could have your latest console load up with the animations and sounds of any old console, what would it be? I have PlayStation 4, but I would love the PlayStation 1 loading screens.
Oh, yes.
Keep up the good work. I would PS1 for me as well, I think.
I think it gives you like shivers down the spine in good way whenever you hear that sort of like
the tingles.
I mean, I do also like the PlayStation 2 one as well, of you moving through the cityscape skyline, which actually Yeah, it was like the amount of space used on your memory card would be how tall the blocks were. And I was like, I never knew that. That was actually
I never knew that. I mean, I don't know about you, but my PS2 like was an absolute liability by the end anyway. It was a sheer luck of the draw whether it would even get to that screen because of the amount that I played it.
I do enjoy as well the original Xbox with the sort of the nuclear reaction of the blob. Imagine that, like your PS5 or whatever feels like it's almost exploding. Can't contain the power.
Just melting internally.
Yeah.
Speaking of animated Xbox background, you can get that. You can get the globulous thing from the original Xbox just pulsating away behind your Xbox, which is a great show. But yeah, Sony should do that stuff. They did on the PS4. Like, you can get a PS1 anniversary theme and make it sound like the PS1.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, if Rich says he has a PS4, then you can literally get that. It's called the PlayStation anniversary theme. But yeah, I would love to take that, like the sound packs or something. I wouldn't want them to monetize it too much, but I feel like it should be on there.
It would be quite weird to have other consoles work with other consoles, like imagine
like a GameCube
booting
skin on a Switch.
Yeah, like booting up your Xbox, but it playing the GameCube, like I think that'd be quite
great
mad.
Though. I think it's like a selection of emulations or whatever. Because that's one of the things that blew me away about emulation on the Steam Deck is like the curation of it. I know this is the most obvious thing to PC people,
yeah.
But like to me, it was like here's like the PlayStation chunk, and it's all themed and it's nice, and here's all the PS1 games, and they all have artwork and everything.
Yep.
And I was like booting into an old headspace or a memory or something. It's like I like that overall idea, but yeah, I would definitely take PS1 or some sort of skin pack for a Switch, like give me an N64 skin pack or something. All the colors and everything would be kind of cool.
I'm just trying to think of like iconic splash screens, and you've got like obviously the PS1 is amazing. If you were to go into like publisher specific ones, then Sega, like just the Sega, like is
with it, Sonic running along the bottom.
Yeah,
of your
I mean,
XMB
like that is like ultimate good vibes right there.
Yeah.
Whenever that comes on,
that's Sega's a hell of a shout. This themes in general for consoles feel like the most unexplored thing.
Yeah,
like there was a time on PS3 and 360 where you could put any image in the background. I think there's a way to do that on Xbox, but you can't do anything on PS5. They've just sort of abandoned it, assumedly to sell you stuff later, and then they never got around to it.
Yeah, true that.
But next question, now, I do apologize because I never I must have not copied across the name of this person from weeks gone by, so I have the question but not the name, so apologies. Make yourself known in future weeks and we'll give you a shout out. So this comes from someone I don't even know, anonymous legend will refer to me, because the question's really really good, who says, if a company was to come out and say multiplayer games were dead, do you think that we'd get the same reaction we did when it was said about single player games?
We've been conditioned in this day and age to accept multiplayer games as the norm. I mean, you look at the likes of Fortnite, DayZ, of like any sort of battle royale formula, and yeah, that's their entire life is multiplayer centric stuff. Like, I think there would be absolute backlash if people told the world over that you couldn't connect to another player to play.
Right,
and I do feel like it would be a louder voice than people defending
like
single player.
That's what I see. Yeah, there'd be like a weird contingent of players that would be like, well, this is just how it was. And we didn't used to, like, everything. Because then it would have to be, I guess if multiplayer games were dead, then you can't have local couch co-op anymore either.
My memories, my core memories of gaming are mostly with friends playing games, either against or with that person. Mm-hmm. So if I was told that you had no multiplayer aspects whatsoever, it does remove over half of like those amazing memories.
Mm.
And so
I definitely have the couch co-op stuff. I definitely have local multiplayer. But for me, that did transition into those first few years of Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And I do play multiplayer stuff every now and then, like Knockout City and Rocket League and stuff. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like, imagine like an industry where it was single player only. Part of me would kind of like if you told me, if every company agreed to like a month or 2 months of single player only games, all the multiplayer servers get shut off and you have to play something worthwhile.
I mean,
I'd take that.
You would get like such a glut of amazing stories because people would be forced to interesting hooks for their stuff. I mean, like, in terms of how the game industry would evolve, if you just had single player focused stuff, then you'd find better crafted tales in order to attract gamers in order to make bigger sales, because that would be the only way of doing it. Because if you don't have the multiplayer aspects, you probably don't have the microtransactions and loot boxes that come with it. You'd have downloadable skins and maybe a lot of expansion passes for single player content, but it would be story driven. Like, in terms of improving the video game industry. Removing multiplayer probably would actually like turn it into an art form that is much greater than it is now.
I just love the idea of, yeah, if they all agreed on it, just thought, okay, this is single player showcase month. Yeah. And but I mean, obviously, the likes of Ubisoft, Warner Brothers, most of the third parties that love, like Activision, would never agree to it because
no,
of the amount of money that Call of Duty makes, and everyone would be forced to play Call of Duty campaigns for a month or something.
It's
which
quite,
would probably make them run away.
It's so strange, isn't it, when you think about how homogenized the video game experience has become because of multiplayer. What used to be the unique and refreshing thing is now just copy paste across so many things. Like, you could hand me pretty much every modern sort of shooting game now, and it will have nearly exactly the same control scheme. It will have all of the same modes. It will have all of the same functions. You give me a battle royale game, it's going to play in the same way. And it's like,
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's all just because the multiplayer excess, that's what people want, because that's what they play. And I think that we lose sight in these in the current age of, we are still the driving factor of the market. We will change what is presented to us depending on what we play. But because we only play the same thing over and over again, we are being fed the same thing over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're only ever going to analyze consumer trends and respond to them. One thing that's always interesting is that that wider mainstream audience is the most silent, like the silent majority. Like, I think that if, say, multiplayer games went away, that person who only plays FIFA or only plays Call of Duty might tell their game-playing friend what the hell is going on, but like, it wouldn't kick up a stink in the same way that the games media would. Part of me thinks that there would be a whole contingent of people that would welcome it for a while, and then we'd probably get sick of single-player stuff and long to do something, you know, it'd be too isolating. Oh my god, we need something else, and then everything would go back around again.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, I can't even imagine what process would begin to engage in the world with no multiplayer. Like, the internet would have to die effectively to.
Oh, can you imagine it? You know, the bit, what's that bit of The Simpsons when, is it Lionel Hutz imagines a world where.
And everyone's
like
holding hands.
And everyone's
dancing. Like,
yeah.
I mean, can you imagine like, a world without lawyers?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
imagine
shuddering.
A world without Twitter and social media. But yeah, I think it would be a hell of a mixed response, but part of me would back that. I would love a shared single player month or something. Next question from Brandon Bressman, who says, What games do you think Nintendo still needs to add to the Nintendo Switch Online service to make it worth the premium price point? Also, do you guys think that we'll get a Game Boy / Game Boy Advance Virtual Console announcement? Now, this has been, it was leaked, but I forget how. I think it was a patent saying that, assumedly, the next catalogue of games to come to Switch Online is the Game Boy Advance. It's not necessarily the Game Boy, but that would be great. What do you think of the Switch Online stuff? Because I don't think, you don't pay for it, do you?
I don't, no. The thing is that, like, I love
Does it
the
feel
idea.
Like you're missing out?
Well, the thing is, I love the idea that they're adding in all of these old games, but I have several like devices around, even just in my local vicinity, that have every single SNES game, every single NES game, in, because they take up like what every single NES game I think comes to like 150 megabytes. Like it's insane how small it is, and like the SNES games were like
it's kilobytes. I mean, there's that. Yeah. I remember realizing that Legend of Zelda: The Original, the whole game is smaller. Sorry, is smaller than a picture of its own logo.
It's mad, isn't it? It's just
the file size of that logo. Yeah.
So I'm just kind of like, yeah, like. you can add all of these games to the Switch Online service, but I'm already playing them in a different medium or have played them.
Right.
There is no game that they can add to the Nintendo Switch from that era of games that would make me want to buy it, because I already have them. So
that's anyone who's invested in emulation, like I mentioned the Steam Deck a lot, because that I got that to be the answer to this, because I feel like the curation on this side is, on Nintendo side especially, has not been very good. Like they in terms of N64 stuff, they got there by adding Pokemon Snap and Banjo and stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of their NES and SNES library, I'm sure Mario RPG is not on there yet, and it's like they keep adding like ancient games.
Do you think
like
that they will ever add the Mario RPG because of the licensing agreement with Square, Soft, Enix, whatever we are at now? Like,
I don't know. I wonder if they're waiting long enough to like remake it or something, because it feels like, I mean, it's weird because it was on the Super Nintendo Mini, like it was on the SNES Mini, but then it wasn't on the Switch Online service. So it's like, okay, well, some deal was done to put that on there, unless the licensing is you can put the original version of the game on there, and because everything is in HD on the Switch Online service in theory, then it didn't work anymore. But yeah, for me, like I just throw money at everything, but I got this thing, and because I was like, I want to have N64 games on my Switch, even though I have an N64. And so I think the N64 side of things is better, but yeah, overall, like you said, there's not any one specific game. For me, it's more an overall curation thing. I would want them to do like Metroid month, and here's Metroid Prime, and here's you know, all the Metroids you know, remastered or whatever, with like maybe specific challenge goals implemented or something like that, because they have alternate versions of NES and SNES games where they'll maybe make you play as a character with a certain build already. They did that with the original Zelda, and I feel like you could do that with Super Metroid. Be like, okay, you know, this is a gauntlet challenge, get through this level or something like that, kind of like Sonic Origins mission mode or something. Something like that. I think they need to curate it a lot more than just here's a dump of what we found in the cupboard.
I feel like that would be amazing actually if they as a company went in and added new challenges to old games to get people in, to incentivize them to actually come and play these classics more so than just owning them in general. Yeah, it's a smart plan.
More of like, you know, they did that, what was that Mario Battle Royale thing that Rich lost himself in?
Yeah. And then it just went away. It's like, bye.
Yeah, like that idea was great. And it's like, oh, okay, they're going to do this for all the old stuff. No.
Nope.
Like they just do 100 Mario games all side by side. It's a really cool idea. And they did Tetris 99. And it's like, it seems things like that, I think, is what I want to see more of. Nintendo always have a playful, you know, sensibility, and they need to apply that to more IP, I would say. Next question down was just a general thing from Djin Rav, DJN Rav, who says, no one ever talks about Night in the Woods. Could we talk about Night in the Woods? Did you play through Night in the Woods?
I did. I found it absolutely and utterly charming, because all of my hipster mates played it like as soon as it came out and were like banging on about it. And that in some ways kind of puts me off a little bit, because I think that if, like, no offense to them, but they love some pretty like guff sniffy style
Monkey
things.
Stuff.
Yeah, like it's like they can be a little bit on the air of pretentious, but I really enjoyed this because there's very few times when you can say that a game is heartfelt and say that without a shred of like cynicism or irony. But Night in the Woods captures this sort of feeling of not really knowing what's going on in your life, going with the flow, having friends of different sort of like backgrounds and mindsets, but sort of like flitting between them. And you realize as you get older how much that sort of that cone shrinks, because when you're at school, when you're at university, you are, whether or not you want to or not, you're forced to hang around with like a class full of kids that are completely different to you half the time. Mm-hmm. And you will find your best friends and you will move through with them. And when you go away from that, like change as a person, find new people who you choose to be with and come back to that friendship group, it creates that weird dichotomy of like, it's comfortable, it's something you know, but at the end of the day, you could be a completely different person to that person that sits opposite you. And I feel mm-hmm. like that's lovely in a way, because that's true yeah. friendship. Like that is looking past what you actively look for in friends when you are an adult and you try to make them, versus a friendship that was born out of a situation or bonded through an experience that happened mm-hmm. in formative years of your childhood. It's just, it's importance of friendship.
No, totally. I mean, I adore Night in the Woods. Mm-hmm. I think, there's a certain quality to that game. It's kind of got like a melancholic kind of feel to it, where yeah. it's all about sort of attempting to live a bigger life, attempting to go to the city, go to university, attempting to make more of yourself from like a small little town beginning mm-hmm. and then needing that sort of comfort blanket of home. And like when you play as May, the character who's returning home for the first time in I think it's like a year or a couple of years yeah. After something's gone wrong when she's been in away from like home or whatever. And I just love, like, because it was so relatable. Like I come from a small town, I've moved to the city, I've done that life, and I know what it feels like to go back to my small town and see my old friends and talk to them and feel that comfort blanket and feel that warmth and that comparison of like, you know, what really matters in life. And I love stuff like that mm-hmm. breaks down like, what are we really striving for? What is the best way to live life and the meaning of life and stuff like that. And like I said, I feel like there's like a melancholic feel tonight in the woods, and massive shout out to the music as well.
Oh, it's beautiful,
I forget the composer, but it's just a really, really gorgeous atmosphere backed up by the soundtrack. That was a game that I just lived in, like I genuinely just lived yeah. in. And there is like it was kind of sold as a horror, like there is like a horror element to it, especially towards the end that they seed at the very beginning, it's not really that kind of game.
It was really weird that actually, because I remember seeing the trailers for it and I did feel a bit misled as to what it was, but I was so glad that I was, in a way. It's one of those few times where I'm like, I was happy I didn't get the experience that I thought it was going to be, because it turned out to be a better one. And I was like, I was surprised every single turn.
And I think that horror aspect, when they finally play their hand, because basically at the very, very beginning, you find, I think it's a severed arm, it's like mm-hmm. a severed limb in the middle of the town, and everyone's like freaking out as to what the hell this is and what's going on. And it's not until way later, like 8 hours, 10 hours later, that something finally comes back out, and then you get the reveal of what's actually going on. And I like what they do with that. I like the commentary that provides, and I'm super vague. But overall, Night in the Woods, I think if you've ever traveled a lot, or if you've lived differently, like you've lived in a certain economic space, and then a different economic space, I think that it speaks to that very, very well.
Yeah.
Just massive shout out to Night in the Woods. I think that game is gorgeous.
It's funny, isn't it? We often talk about video games on this podcast and just in general that seem to attune with us, and they always seem to revolve around this idea of going through change, of metamorphosis. Like it's looking at Celeste, it's looking at Disco Elysium, it's looking at what's it called? Hell, that's going to annoy me. The Nordic game where you are a Viking woman who's trying Hellblade, that's the one I was thinking uh-huh. of. Like, it's about like coming to terms with something that has been either put upon the player, or it's something that the character is going through. And mm-hmm. you come out the other side just learning more about yourself in the process. And mm-hmm. it's like Night in the Woods is that game. It's about just like actually thinking, oh, you think you've gone out and changed yourself and your entire outlook on the world is better because you've gone and broken free from the small town, but is it? Like, but challenging yourself, even though you feel like you've made progress, is good from time to time.
And I think there's that assumption, I don't know whether it's capitalistically or whether it's culturally or whatever, but there's that whole assumption of, okay, get yourself out there, go get married, go do this stuff, go crack on, go get a career, go throw yourself into the churn, go do all this stuff. And that can be massively rewarding and it can work. but also there is an importance to just taking a step back and going, okay, do I actually want this right now at this point in my life? Should I just take a minute? And the value of taking a minute. And I think that those kind of things, that, like I said, that melancholic reflection, I just adore. I've been playing through Citizen Sleeper, which is not to make it too much about that, but that has immediately become my second favorite game of the year.
Really?
Just a gorgeous, gorgeous game that is all about life on the edge of space as you play as like an android with a human consciousness. And that has the same kind of thing. The score is very disparate. The score is very atmospheric and ambient. It's very like Blade Runner kind of music. And it's just, it's just like, what is life in this space? And I think that the way that game makes you feel, some similar to Night in the Woods, bits and pieces, just a great reflection on what am I doing and why am I doing it, and making sure you're in the right headspace for it. And if you need to take a minute, you take a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Next question from McAllister NYC. What are some games that have uber longevity to you and what makes them hold up so well? Have an awesome weekend. Well, have an awesome weekend to yourself.
Yeah, big love to your friend. I do routinely go back and play through Bioshock because I enjoy that game a lot. I go back and play a lot of the old Resident Evil games as well because it's just that feeling of, like I was talking about, core memories and experiences and seeing how they've changed. It's a tough one because longevity you can describe in so many ways. You can do it. Does it have a lot of content? Does it have a huge amount of replayability in the fact that you go through it again and again and again? Because I went through, like we were talking about Elden Ring just before the podcast started. It's like going back through that again after sinking like 60 to 70 hours into it. And it's just kind of like, I still want to see what this game has to offer. I still think that I can get more out of it. And it's like, I love games that provide me new challenges in New Game Plus as well. Like any game that's got a good New Game Plus is an absolute like, yes, let's
go. I think it's like if they find a way to make a game that ends and like obviously you have a story thing, maybe it's satisfying or whatever, but it also like re-loops you back into the start. It's like, okay, go do it again if you want and you'll be better at it. You'll have access to more stuff or whatever. Like that's something that, I'll just kind of keep churning through. I think the Spider-Man game from 2018 is super playable in terms of like the side mission stuff. For me, I'm just going to do a shout out to Ape Escape.
Everyone's been going on about it. Everyone's witnessing the glory of Ape Escape.
And like that was the game that I got a DualShock for when I was a kid. Like, and I loved it. And that's the thing. That was the game that I would always rebuy over the years. I would always just get it again when I had access to a PS1 or a mate would have a PS1 that I'm living with or whatever. And I would just get Ape Escape again. And so then it'd been a few years. I haven't really played it across the 2010s. But that was one of those games where as soon as it was on the premium service, I was like, I can't wait to see this again. And other than the draw distance being horrendous, it's like you might as well be playing in a cube. Then other than that, it plays so well, and it's so charming. Apparently the American version had American voiceovers.
Our voiceovers were awful. Like they are the worst voice acting that I've ever heard. Just like hearing Spike talk is just like, what are you on about,
mate? It's
like, have you just woken up from a coma? Like, is this, did somebody put the lines right in front of you?
See, have you noticed, and this is a kind of a side point, but have you noticed in all of the new Square Enix RPGs, not all new ones because it goes back a few years, but every Square Enix English voiceover is like the chirpiest, most like I'm from London voiceover. Like, I was watching the trailer for the Deerfield or the Direfield Chronicles, and that's the same thing. And it feels like Final Fantasy 16 is it as well, because the main dude's called Clive. Yeah. It's just like, what are we doing?
When I heard that his name was Clive, all I could think of was just all of the like villains and heroes out there that have just got dumb names. And it keeps coming back to that point of Psychic Force from the PlayStation 1, the main bad guy is called Keith. And that it just does not instill fear.
I would take Keith as a protagonist over Clive, though.
Clive's a weird one to go with.
Yeah, it's a hard line to walk. Next question from You Done Messed Up Baron, who says, why is no one talking about the plucky squire? It looks innovative and imaginative AF.
Man,
I only found out this morning that game's from an ex-Pokemon artist. Like, that game looks incredible. But yeah, I didn't realize it was someone who worked on Pokemon doing their own thing.
Because when I first saw it, and it goes through the sort of fairy tale book thing, I was like, oh, here we go. Another sort of like cutesy 2D platformer style thing that maybe is going to act a bit like Scribblenauts. I couldn't really tell what the gimmick was. But when he pops up out of the thing, I was like, oh my God, this game is going to be brilliant. This is going to be brilliant. It's literally like Toy Soldiers, but with like a really cutesy, like almost Kirby-esque charm to it. And I was like, that's the one for me.
Well, the thing is, I love in Mario Odyssey sort of blending 2D, 3D stuff, like having a character in 3D jump into a wall and then you're just playing a 2D game. It's like, why is there not more hybridization of that stuff? Like Nier Automata does it at the beginning, but never really again.
They did it with Link Between Worlds, but then they only used it kind of as the transitionary thing and a few puzzles here and there. Like,
but
I feel
the idea
like,
was there. Like, it feels like way more people should have capitalized on that. And yeah, Plucky Squire, if anyone hasn't seen, is like a storybook game where it just looks like an actual storybook, like a child's storybook, opens on a table, and it's just this really gorgeously designed artwork around the Plucky Squire, this knight. But then you jump off the page, and it seems like they're doing a whole bunch of different genres and stuff as the story goes on, which is kind of what Pixel Story was going to be.
Yeah.
And I know that that does kind of have a similar thing, but for me,
It Takes Two vibes from this as well, because I was like, oh, cool, we've got like the oversized world, we're gonna do like, is there gonna be lots of sort of like using the world elements around you to do other things? So I was like, it could be interesting as well to see how they utilize the pages, because let's just say that we're going to be hopping back between the book and the 3D world quite a lot. What if like the page is in direct sunlight? Does that mean you can't read the certain bits of the platform? Like, what if it gets wet and rips off or something? And I was like, there's a lot of like there's a lot of experimentation that can be done with the actual tactile environment that you're playing in. So I was like, that could be very good.
Definitely. Also, massive shout out to Hand of Fate. I feel like the
love that game.
No one talks about Hand of Fate, but it's the, like, it's a deck builder where you're building, like, the cards that you have are story pieces. Yeah. You're laying down, like, okay, I want to, at some point in this shuffle, I want to visit a merchant, or I want to do this fight and get XP or whatever. And then you get to see, like the card for an axe comes out of it as your character grabs it and stuff. Yeah, massive shout out to Hand of Fate.
Hand of Fate 2 did a lot to improve the combat mechanics of it as well, so it feels like a much more rounded out game. And I love the gimmick of the fact that you are like a soul traveling with this unknown figure who may or may not be death itself, sort of thing. And then it's like, you're going to play me, and when we finish playing, then you'll be judged, or there'll be something horrible or good will happen to you.
He's very like the merchant from Resi 4.
Yeah, and like, there's like a lot of sinister undertones, which obviously culminate in this sort of like the final boss of the game. But you're like, okay, there's a lot going on in such a simple game. And I'm like,
it's so cool. I think if you're liking the idea of Plucky Squire and the idea of like stuff coming to life, and you don't mind sort of like board game style mechanics alongside a Arkham combat system, then I would go and try Hand of Fate.
Definitely.
Final question from Zach, who says, what's the most ridiculous thing you guys have done to play a game? Mine might be buying an old 360 to track down a copy of Battlefield's. Wait, no. What's BFME 2? What am I?
Battle for Middle Earth.
Battle for Middle Earth 2?
Yeah, man. Okay, we can talk about that game, mate.
Wait a minute, let me go back into
that. If it's the one I'm thinking of, let me just double check. Battle for Middle Earth 2.
Because I thought it was going to be Battlefield, and I was like, oh, is it Bad Company? But then it can't be. Let me see if Battle for Middle Earth.
It is Battle for Middle Earth. Lord of the Rings, the Battle for Middle Earth 2. Yeah. And
Sure.
This game is a stonker, mate. I love this game, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, hold on. Done to play a game. Mine might be buying an old 360 to track down a... Mine might be buying an old 360 and tracking down a copy of Battle for Middle Earth 2 just for that game.
Seriously, what a title, by the way. I was like so buzzed when I heard that you were talking about this game, because all I'll need to say to anyone who's played this is tower upon tower upon tower upon tower, because literally the game comes down to, it's like, it's your classic sort of like RTS style game, but set in Middle Earth. But there was one sort of play style that you could do where on either faction, where you would just build these massive stone towers that had archer points on the top, and you could just build wall upon wall of these, so the enemies would have to churn their way through them while all the time getting shot, and you would need every single ounce of cheese that you had to muster, because some of these were brutally difficult, these levels. I love that game.
I've never played that. I don't play that much top down sort of RTS type stuff, but two of my flatmates, my roommates when I was in university, did, and they would just yell across the room at each other. Like, they would have a PC set in one room and then just across the landing to the other one, and they were in the same game, but then I think you can work together in that game. So I mean, they're Geordie, so this isn't gonna make much sense to people outside the Northeast, but one of my friends would just be like, Gollum's coming, man, Gollum's coming, you've got to watch out for Gollum, man.
Watch out for Gollum.
It's just hearing that at nearly all hours of the day, especially when they've been drinking later on. For me, the craziest thing that I've done or whatever to get like access to games is just the Steam Deck. That thing is half a grand, because I really want to play PsyOps and Def Jam Fight for New York and Burnout 3 and all these games, all these licensed games that they will never make available again. But I love it. Like, I know I've been going back to Auto Model Easter on the PS2 and stuff like that. Like I said, things that will never get released again. But that is a ludicrous amount of money to access my own memories.
I mean, I think I could just point to my PS1 collection and just be like, that is the extent that I've gone to get some of these games, because monetary cost, the time of tracking them down, of constant eBay bidding wars, just to get games that mean nothing to nobody. And it's just like, apart from the fact that I have them now, it's like, you'll have no idea how hard fought I had to go through to get some working copies of the original Resident Evil trilogy. Like, they're not even that expensive, but getting them in pristine boxes with manuals and stuff like that is so hard to come by. It would
that
always be
rush,
like,
though,
it'd
when
be like,
you find one.
Like missing the sleeve. And do you know what pisses me off the most is when you see a game that you desperately want, that you know, in all fairness, is probably fairly rare, but it's missing the insert of the actual, like, the box art cover on a PS1 jewel case. And you're just kind of looking at it like, I can see the disc, I can see the manual, I know that all I really technically need to do is print off like a high quality res, but it won't be the same as having it on that official piece of paper.
I had that with my N64, where I, when I got it a couple of years back, I was like, I'm going to collect the most pristine N64 collection possible. And then I saw the prices for pristine
and
N64
like,
boxes.
Nope.
And I was like, this is insane. I did it once for Mario 64, because I was like, well, certain titles need that prestige. So I was like, well, Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Perfect Dark, they're all in perfect condition. But then other stuff is just sort of there. Like, I've just got a cartridge for GoldenEye. I know that should be gold tier.
Yeah.
But it was like £100 for like better cardboard.
It's
and
mad.
I was like, side by side, I'll just take the cartridge for like 15 quid.
There's actually companies out there whose their entire gimmick is they make old cardboard sleeves for N64 and for the like PlayStation 1 jewel cases and stuff like
that's
that. But they're about sort of like £20 to £30 per case.
Right.
And like, it's worth it if you are like an Uber collector, but man, that it can rack up the price very quickly.
Yeah, I think the answer to most of this is going to be attempting to access old games outside of a Game Pass type service, because unless you're doing the emulation thing, it's going to be retro prices, which is crazy.
I tell you what, in terms of like the lengths that I went to in order to record some games though, man, like trying to get some games working like with capture devices and stuff like that, I remember having to buy an old PlayStation 3 that was able to play the PlayStation 1, 2, and 3 games, you know, the bread box looking one. Then I had to buy like I was trying to capture footage of No More Heroes 1, I think, that came out for the PS3. Okay. And that in itself was expensive. Getting it to work with my very outdated at the time setup that was there was a pain in the ass. And then only being able to capture it at like 720p. I'm just like, what am I even capturing it for? Like, what is the point of doing this? Like,
but I think there's something about accessing the old stuff that usually will carry. Like, I mean, I like to think I'd not played Mario 64 all the way through until I was 30. I did it as my 30th birthday thing. And I will always remember, because my wife was away for a week, and I just sat on the couch with
that was
Mario
you,
was 64.
It? That was done.
With an N64 controller, and I was like, I still got to have that great experience of this game is great and the music's great and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes the old rush is worth it. But I can't endorse throwing half a grand at PsyOps, the Mind Gate conspiracy.
No, probably not.
For as much as I adore it. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in your questions. I forget what I say. I say something about this being the UBP, the UBP.
You do
the
say
UBP.
Something about that. P.
I've been Scott Tailford. You've been Jules Gill.
I have indeed, and check back next Thursday for us posting out for asking for your questions. Unfortunately, we didn't do it this week because of the fact we had so many in the take trough that we just thought we'd get through some of the oldies and the goldies.
Yes. Why not? You can find us on Twitter. I'm at /LP89.
And you can find me over there at RetroJ, but the O is a zero.
Beautiful. Thank you all again very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.